Hello, Patreon listeners. I'm Fry.
And I'm Brie, and we are not ranking popes or anti-popes. We're doing something totally, totally different today. Completely different. We have never actually tried anything like this. So this is a little bit of an experiment. At the same time, it's kind of setting up when we discuss Pope media, what that's gonna look like. So
I had to do Pope homework.
You had Pope homework, yay! Oh, and see, this is the thing with Pope media. Most of the stuff is going to be stuff that I've seen, and you're going to have to watch it so we can talk about it. I think it's probably good to say right up top, so if you have any input on how this goes, or there's things you'd like us to look at a little bit more rather than the way that we do this, let us know, because you are the patrons, and this is for you. So today, we are going to be looking at a movie that we both watched. It is the Pope documentary that came out very recently called Pope Francis, A Man of His Word.
Yeah.
Yeah. So before we get started and like digging into this film a little bit, I'll just kind of introduce what it is, kind of how it was received, what the purpose was, and then we could talk about it. This film was produced in 2018. It's a documentary film, so it's very, very recent. It was produced, co-written, and directed by Wim Wenders, and this was a project that originated when the Vatican actually sent him a letter in 2014 asking him to lead a project about Pope Francis. So this is something that the Vatican is definitely involved in, that they were very interested in pursuing, so that's always important to remember who this is for. But Wim Wenders, the guy who directed it and did all the interviews, he received final cut privilege on the project, so it was out of the Vatican's hands at that point. It was produced as a Swiss, Italian, French, German co-production, because he travels quite extensively in it. It premiered at the 2018 Cannes Film Festival. It focuses on the life and goals of Pope Francis. Generally favorably reviewed with an 85% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for like a documentary, that's pretty high.
It was very high. I was quite surprised to see that. And my favorite quote on Rotten Tomatoes about it said, "The film is like a, quote, non-denominational sermon under cinematic care of an artist first and a Pope Francis fanboy second." So, you know, as a Pope Francis fangirl, I can relate. The other thing is, you said it was on American Netflix?
Yes, yes. I watched it on American Netflix.
Which is crazy, because it is not on Canadian Netflix. So if you're in another country, you'll have to let us know. And funnily enough, if you search Pope in Canadian Netflix, almost everything that comes up has to do with Pablo Escobar and Narcos and
different
drug lords. And I'm like, no, that's not what we're looking at. There is another movie on here that has definitely caught my eye, and it's called Call Me Francis, and it's clearly about Pope Francis, so maybe that's next on our list, but before that, so the first thing, I want to start this off with is, obviously, if you've been listening to this podcast, or know anything about us, I have strong feelings about Pope Francis, and I have had strong feelings about Pope Francis since he was elected. But you really haven't. You haven't really expressed how you feel about him. So, I'm interested to hear how you feel about him now after seeing a film that outlines who he is and what he believes and what his missions are. Do you have an opinion about him now?
You know, they outlined a lot of good stuff for him. Like, he absolutely does not enjoy rich people.
Oh yeah, for sure. We're gonna get into that for sure.
Working on, you know, climate. He cares about the planet, which is wild. And, you know, like, not normally people are like, the Pope is not like, gotta take care of the earth, you guys.
It's true.
I feel like I've ever heard a Pope say that. And he's just, I don't know, like, it was nice listening to him talk and express his own feelings and opinions outside of, like, church doctrine. Like, he talked a little doctrinally about church doctrine, and they pulled some questions that were, you know, slightly political and of interest right now. But most right. of it was him just expressing his belief system and his just how he feels day to day.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, too, because there is it's not a documentary about theology. They're not here to try and preach to anybody or convert anybody, which I thought was interesting because he spends a lot more time talking about people of other religions or, you know, there is a lot of things where he's kind of breaking down what he sees in the church as negative, and rather than just trying to be like, yes, you should absolutely believe what I believe, it's a lot more personal on that level.
Yeah.
Did he say anything that surprised you that you really, really weren't expecting?
That I wasn't expecting?
Not knowing it, like a whole lot about him, was there anything that kind of jumped out at you as like, whoa, okay, that's not what I expected?
I think most of what he said was what I expected.
Okay.
Nothing really, he didn't veer wildly to one side or the other.
True. Very true. So with that in mind, I think it's important for us to, you know, if we're going to talk about this, to have somewhat of an analytical look at it and then kind of add our own commentary on it. So,
all right, full disclosure.
Yep.
I started watching the film regular, just straight in.
Mm-hmm.
He is such a deliberately slow talker
that yeah.
it kind of hurt me a little, and I could not really pay attention to him. So I turned on, Netflix has this awesome thing for, like, blind people called audio descriptions.
Mm-hmm. Descriptive video, yeah.
Yeah, descriptive video. So I turned that on. So they read all the subtitles for me.
Oh, you know, that would be good, too. I mean, that probably would have been useful because I've seen this film now a couple of times, and the first time I watched it, I took notes like a crazy person. So I was like writing so furiously, I had to pause the movie several times to look at what the subtitle said and then, you know, type it all out and then go back to it. So maybe I should have done a little bit of that. Yeah.
But I also got like descriptive audio for like things like, it's a mound of trash on a beach.
Well, there is definitely, they've pulled from some imagery, so I can only imagine. And there are moments in this film, and this is going to get into what I want to talk about with theming, but like, there's these, of all the things in the film, there were these cheesy little recreations of St. Francis of Assisi.
Yeah, walking down St. Francis is overimposed on these other people. Like, that's how they described it.
It was just, it was an odd, I get what they were trying to do because, and this, I'll pull in this right away, is the theming of this is very, very strongly drawing the parallels between St. Francis of Assisi and Pope Francis. But if I had to look at it and kind of point out where there was a misstep in this, it was adding those stupid little recreations because it wasn't like you were actually watching a scene where anything was really happening. It was mostly just him, like, standing around.
St. Francis stares off into the distance.
That could have been the description for almost every of those little interludes.
Except so, the one where he went down the stairs.
Well, okay, but he was still staring off. He went down the stairs. It's true. Well, there was one at one point where he's kind of like serving a sick person. It's like, okay, some interaction. Okay, that's one. That's a thing. But other than that, yeah, that didn't add anything for me. But the message kind of did, you know? The whole point was, you know, Francis chose his papal name because of St. Francis of Assisi. And he's been very clear on that. And he talks about how St. Francis of Assisi was a champion for humankind and a figure who dedicated himself to restoring the church. And considering everything that we're dealing with now in the church, you can really see why someone like Francis would want to be that simple, modest reformer who just wanted to live an ascetic life and simply and just there's a line very early in the film where they're talking about the life of Saint Francis and they say, isn't that exactly what is needed for today? And that, I think, is the message they want to get across, is this is why Pope Francis has chosen this name. This is why he chooses to emulate this person, because it is the message that the world needs today. So I took a couple notes here on like his main messages, and I kind of want to just go over them as an idea.
Oh, I'm glad you have some structure, because yes. I am not the structure person.
Well, there are going to be points where we're going to do things like watch The Young Pope, and they've just announced that they're doing a new show that is going to follow The Young Pope called The New Pope, so we'll be doing that, and hopefully they haven't released an actual day that's coming out yet, but hopefully we can get through some of The Young Pope before that point, so we can do it maybe weekly as it goes, but no promises. So those will be a lot more freeform. But because this is a documentary, there's some structure here. So his main message, I think, that if you look at everything else that he's talking about, it comes down to this idea of moving away from the fast-paced life and living simply. And, you know, he talks about the poverty of the world is a scandal and an outrage, especially when there are so many riches and so much wealth in the world that could be shared. And, you know, he talks about this quite extensively, saying people should become a little bit more poor and not have so many things and not place so much value in these things so that they could share their wealth, because when people share, they're no longer poor. I'm sure you heard when he was speaking, he said, one can always add more water to the beans, which yes. He got everybody to repeat with him. And it was just such a Francis moment. So,
yeah, it was that huge Argentinian crowd.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And these are people who he really understands, right? And who he grew up with. So, you know, he talks about the way to escape competitive consumerism is the concreteness of day-to-day work, you know? And he said something, it was like, work is imitating God with your hands by creating something.
Yeah, but he said meaningful work, which kind of struck me as, because he doesn't want someone to do the 9-to-5 grind where they're just unfulfilled.
Yeah. He talks about creating something, whatever that is, whatever that something is, something that you can give to the world that has some sort of value. You know, we have seen in episodes that we've had before that he's a big appreciator of art. He's a big appreciator of the farm life. Like, whatever that thing is that you're creating, it does need to be meaningful for you. Otherwise, he says, it's robbing you of your dignity, which is an interesting concept. And, you know, that whole, it all plays down, like you said, not doing the grind. You know, men need to rest, because it's in our rest that we find our, like, gratitude and the value of our family and getting in touch with things. And
he's not saying, like, he understands that you need to make money, which is why he went into the whole, like, why do all the rich people have all of the money? Share.
Yeah. And I think of all the things that he talked about in this film, this is the one that I connect with the most. And it's interesting, I'm going to get, this is where I go from analysis to personal anecdote, because I've always been a pretty strong believer in being fairly minimalist. I wouldn't consider myself a minimalist because, you know, I have a house and it's full of stuff, but I really pare down as much as I can. And very recently, as we've talked about off recording, my husband has kind of found someone online that he has been listening to that kind of structures that for him. You and I started talking about Marie Kondo, like, I don't know, 7 years ago.
Oh, but it was so long. It was at least 3 or 4.
Yeah, it was a while. Super, super long time ago that you and I kind of got into that and started to pursue kind of the aspect of tidy and organization and getting rid of the things you don't need. And now he's really kind of picked up on that in a way that makes sense for him. And so pretty much this whole of 2019 so far, we've really been focused on minimalizing, paring down, investing in quality and not just having so much stuff, especially because we just got married. You know, people were always asking us when we were getting married what we'd like for a wedding present. We're like, we don't need anything. We're okay. You know, like,
we actually, with our most recent move, ended up getting rid of a lot of the stuff that we ended up getting for our wedding just mm-hmm. because we never use it.
Well, and that's the thing, right? It just takes up space.
I don't actually need 17 margarita glasses.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Like, they look cool, but...
Well, and that's it's funny that you use that example specifically because... When we moved in, we bought a set of margarita glasses, and neither my husband nor I drink, but we're like, hey, if we have people over, or, like, they would be nice for desserts or whatever, in 2 weeks, we'll have lived here for 3 years, and they were still in the box, so it's like, it's time for that to go, so.
Well, the thing about margarita glasses in particular is they look really cool, and then you realize they are the most impractical glass you could ever attempt to use for anything. Everything will flop out of them. They're like,
yeah,
2 inches high and wide.
It's true. They look nice, but we never use them, and I can't think of anything we would use them for because they are completely impractical. So, yeah, this whole, you know, that was the first thing when we were talking about, you know, just paring down and getting rid of stuff and focusing more on like just simplifying. That was the first thing that had to go, was the stupid margarita glasses that we've never used. And then it was clothes, and, you know, so listening to him talk about this after really making a commitment to do this in my life was, I was just like, yeah, Francis, I feel you. It wasn't new information, but it was like reaffirming, like, absolutely, this is definitely what we need. And, you know, we work a lot. My husband and I both, you know, 12-hour work days, 5 days a week at least for the both of us. So when we come home, the last thing we want to do is clean up crap or just be, you know, fuddled with all of the junk and the clutter and all of that. So it was just nice to see that being presented by someone who I clearly enjoy listening to. So. But moving on from that, he also, of course, talked a lot about the environment and what he refers to as Mother Sister Earth, because that's what St. Francis of Assisi called in the environment. You know, it boils down to this idea of that humanity's relationship with nature needs to be balanced, and plundering Mother Earth is inevitably followed by poverty and hunger. And this is something that every socio-economist will tell you, and every sociologist, and anybody who studied cultural anthropology, that when we start to massively consume our resources or lack of care of the environment, we have social diseases and just absolute poverty, war, famine, like all of those pieces that are terrible in the world. So he really focuses on this as a spiritual issue. Like, if you cannot get on board with this just for the future of your planet and your society, then this is going to become a religious calling for a lot of people. So, there was a moment where he comes to the UN and he speaks to the UN about this, and he also speaks to the Senate about it, which I thought was really interesting. And, you know, he's talking about how important it is for all religions and all organizations to tackle poverty and the environment because they're inextricably linked. And that one is just like, yep, I could totally get behind you on that. I feel you. So that was cool. And then he talked about, I think he was the one I was maybe a little bit surprised by in a way, is how very bluntly he spoke about the reforms that are needed in the church. Like, he said at one point, a church that bases hope on wealth is a church where Jesus is not there. So, you know, and he said that like twice, I think, because, you know, he's saying that poverty is at the center of the gospel, and a church cannot serve two masters. It'll serve God or money, but it can't serve both. So, you know, that's a pretty direct call out.
Yeah, but I mean, that's all scripture too, like.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
There's whole sections of the Bible where it's like, please give up all your wealth.
Mm-hmm. we cannot forget that he also came from the Jesuit order. Like, he was a Jesuit, and that particularly is what they are all about, is giving up everything you have, living in extreme poverty, and going to very dangerous places. So, this idea of a poor church for the poor, is something that has kind of been Francis's calling card.
I don't feel like it's a poor church for the poor. I think it's more like, cause there's a lot of ostentatious stuff in the church.
So, absolutely.
Like, tear that down and.
Well, and we've seen that with Francis, cause right since the beginning of his papacy, he started confiscating mansions that bishops and cardinals were living in, and he's like, absolutely not. You do not get to live here anymore. I'm turning it into an orphanage. And that rubbed people so the wrong way. But it's important. And, you know, he also, there's a moment in this where he's addressing his cardinals, and he's talking about basically calling it out directly, saying the church is weakened by them because they think of the church as immortal or indispensable. They're not looking to improve. They're too busy being rivals with one another. They're too vainglorious. There's too many closed circles where things are not getting dealt with. And he basically called them hoarders and said, you know, when an apostle tries to fill an existential void in his heart with material goods, it's not out of need, but some sort of, like, sense of security that's completely non-spiritual. So, you know, he was just calling them out directly. And then he talks about how the church needs to be the apostle of the ear, you know, how to listen. He says that, you know, people in the church talk too much, and we need to do a better job of listening. So the world is too deaf to the sufferings of the poor and the sick, and we should be loving them the most. And,
yeah, and that was the part where he was watching just videos of terrible, terrible things. I guess just educating himself about it.
Yeah, and it was right after, he went to the Philippines, right after the hurricane, and he's talking to these people that have lost everything. And he says, we must view people in crisis and tragedy as persons. You know, see their faces and listen to their stories directly.
Yeah, not as numbers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and it is a hard thing for a lot of people to do because it's a lot to handle. But especially when he's addressing, like, politicians, he's really like,
oh, yeah,
these are people. Like, you need to remember that these are people. And on that note, and speaking of people and tragedy, he takes a really hard line in this film about the sex abuse crisis that the church is going through right now, which is interesting to me because, you know, even though we're seeing this in action play out right now, there have been a lot of people in the last couple of years that have tried to paint Francis as being somewhat apathetic to what's going on. And people have been saying, well, what's he going to do about it? What's he going to do about it? How does he feel about this? He's been very quiet. And with the benefit of hindsight that, you know, we're going into the sex abuse crisis council in like a week, we know that there's been some changes since. But at the time of the filming, you know, he still has a pretty hard line about this. So if anybody had any doubt about the way he felt, he says, the church cannot remain indifferent to the abuse of minors. It needs to be a zero tolerance, and to punish the priests with this problem, the priests and bishops must be removed, and they must support the legal action by parents in civil courts. So he is full on for, you know, the we've seen laicization, and we've seen the people being pursued outside of that benefit of the clergy. So he has a really strong stance on this, which was interesting. And, you know, I think this comes down to the final thing that I want to say just about the theming and his message, which is he talks really specifically about needing to guard ourselves from universal indifference. And that plays into the sex abuse crisis. That plays into the migrant situation. That plays into the environment. And everything else that he is really about comes from this idea of not being indifferent to the world. So you know, who are we to judge other people? No one should be excluded, and we should all be sharing more, is kind of what he's getting about. So I think those are the main points, and now we can talk about our other little, like, observances throughout the movies, because I know you and I had a very similar one when he came to speak to the Senate in the United States.
In that bitty, bitty car.
And there's these huge security cars all coming. Oh my God. And then he's in, like, a Fiat.
The security SUVs were, like, three times the size of this car he's in.
And he just looks so, like, he's just like, yeah, I don't need a fancy car, whatever. The other thing I noticed about it, my other favorite moment is he's speaking to the House in the States, and the amount of times while he's speaking that they needed to, like, stand up and give him a standing ovation and, like, applaud what he'd get, like, three words out, and then they'd be applauding again, and then he'd get another three words out, and it's like, is this... It felt like it was all for show on the politician side, and he's just kind of like, let me talk.
Yeah, well, part of it was like he was going through, like, and this is America, the land of the free. And like, he would be like, this is America, and then they'd clap, and he's like, the land of the free, and then they'd clap again, and then he's like, I hate you guys.
He pretty much did. He's like, you need to look at these people as people, and then they're all clapping, and then he says something like, he says, it's our responsibility to end the arms trade, and there's, like, a very, very muted clap. So it was just such a strange moment, because you had, yeah, it was two completely different ways of operating, coming face to face, and they didn't know how to handle one another. So it was, that one made me laugh a lot. I also loved when he's being interviewed with the children. And a child asks him something about, like, did you ever want to be Pope or something? And he's like, no, I did not want to be Pope.
Well, he started being like, do you know how sometimes things just happen?
And then he says, a man who wants to become Pope does not like himself and God does not bless him. So it's like, what? Which, I mean, I get, when you break it down, it's definitely Francis talking about people having too much personal ambition and all of those pieces. But the way he said it is like, a man who wants to be Pope doesn't like himself. It's like, ooh. Because if you pay attention to the conclave, he's taken some shots at some certain people there.
Yeah. Just talking to this little kid.
Yeah. And it was just, I thought it was very sweet that he was just like, yeah, no, I never wanted to be Pope. Yeah. Because I really don't think he ever did. It is somewhat inconsistent with who he is as a person.
Well, like, the beginning of the movie showed his like acceptance speech up on the balcony. He's like, guess I'm here now.
Yeah. I love it. And there was the old Argentinian nun that he used to have like this great relationship with, and she's kind of like, oh, it's kind of sad he can't do that anymore, but, you know, he's the father to all of us now, kind of thing. Like, even the people who knew him well were kind of like, yeah, they don't think this is what he wanted, but hey, he's doing a good job.
Oh, I loved her, too. She's like, I was standing up on a balcony and I didn't think he would see me.
It was very sweet. There were a lot of sweet moments in it. You know, like, there was the planting of the tree with all the leaders of different religious faiths. I thought that was such a Francis thing to do. But then he was visiting prisoners and speaking with them, and then he washes their feet, and it was, I understand what that is in the religious context of what's happening there, but he has such a connection with prisoners. It's always something that he goes back to, so watching those moments were very, just very sweet. I thought it was just like, oh, that's Francis. And like, there were a lot of interesting things. You know, he spoke at a Shoah memorial at the Yad Vashem, which was interesting because, you know, Catholicism and Judaism have not always gotten along. And then there's a scene of him walking through Auschwitz, and that one was strange because I remember walking down there and it's such a surreal feeling anyways. And then to watch this very surreal scene with a Pope walking through the middle of it was extra surreal. he goes to Ground Zero, and then he's in the Holy Land, and he's at the Wailing Wall, and, you know, he's just kind of like, hey, you know, there's a small moment that they kind of flick on where he's meeting with the prime minister, or the presidents of Palestine and Israel at the same time. And he's just kind of like, yeah, you know, he's just, it was a small moment, but, you know, it was just, it was, yeah, Francis is getting in there and dealing with everyone. So, you know, I thought it was pretty good. And I think one of my other favorite moments was he talked about his morning prayer and how he recites Thomas More's prayer for a sense of good humor. That's just it. You know, you can see that he like loves to laugh and he just loves to have a good time when he's interacting with people. And
yeah, the end there was like, he tells a little joke directly at the end before it fades to black.
Yeah. And I love that too, because when you think back to our first Patreon episode where we talked about how there was that campaign when they were about to elect the new Pope and everyone's like, Jorge Bergoglio does not smile enough. He never smiles. And that's Pope Francis. And like, this man smiles all the time.
All the time. The description for it was, he looks down and back up the camera with a coy smile.
Coy smile.
It was ridiculous. Putting the descriptor on.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to do that because it sounds like I could just, there are certain moments in the movie that I thought were hilarious, how they were like portrayed out. So I'd love to hear how they were described. All, you know, all nonsense aside, just like a very monotone description of this hilarious moment would be great.
I'm pretty sure, cause, like they didn't give me the credits for who did the talkover. But, like, mm-hmm. I listened to an audiobook called Jade City, and I'm pretty sure it's the same man. He's got a pretty distinctive voice.
Oh, okay.
And he does a lot of voice work anyway, so it might be him. But, like I said, there's not any credits, so I can't confirm that it's the same man.
That would just be such a strange job to describe video, like... Do you get a script? You've got to get a script or something. It's just...
Yeah, they definitely give you a script.
It's very strange, so...
But, like, part of it was, like, Mike Pence sits looking, like, dour or something.
Oh, he's so to, like, serious. Yeah. And that's the thing, is as he's talking about certain things, and they've got this big wide angle on while he's talking, and some of those politicians just start squirming. You're just sitting there watching them, and they're like, oh, I gotta stand up and clap for this man or I'm gonna look like the asshole. But, you know, they're just not into it. Mm-hmm. Very amusing. But yeah, I mean, I think that the last line of the film is Pope Francis says something like, I hope the sea of Francis grows in many hearts. And the narrator says he has fearlessly moved the church forward against much resistance and the legacy of St. Francis lives on. It really does. It was... a nice film to watch, regardless of if you're a big fan of his or not. Obviously, I'm a little biased because I enjoy him, but, like, I finished watching the film and I was just like, oh, that was nice.
Yeah, and considering, and, like, it didn't feel overly preachy and it didn't feel overly, like whoever said that it was like, oh, it's a Pope Francis fanboy. It didn't feel that way. It didn't feel real fanboy-y.
Yeah. I mean, I think any time, and this is one of the reasons that I wanted to introduce it with, like, the intention behind it, because I think any time where, you know, the Vatican is the one approaching about doing this project, obviously we know it's going to portray him in a very specific light, which is very positive. But I didn't really have a problem with that because it didn't feel disingenuous. It felt like somebody was having this very authentic experience. That's what Wim Wenders said after talking about the film, is that he felt that they were just having these very candid conversations. It didn't feel, like, produced. It didn't feel like they had to throw a whole bunch of things in there to make it look a certain way. It was just, like, it was almost like a day in the life.
He didn't have to do a lot of, like, over-talk. Like, he had a couple of moments where he narrated a little bit, but he didn't have to be, like, and Pope Francis feels this way because of this, just to, like, justify. There was, like, no huge justifications throughout the whole film or anything.
Yeah, there was very little in terms of narration. It's, like, a couple sentences at the beginning of the movie and a couple at the end. Otherwise, it just...
Him explaining, like, Pope Francis has a weird, like, climate change, I don't know, PowerPoint presentation on the wall of
his
building.
Encyclical.
Yeah.
Some building, that's St. Peter. Oh, yeah. yeah. That's his encyclical. It's, what is it? It's called, I have the name of it somewhere. It's on the care of our common home. Was his big presentation about the importance of preserving Sister Mother Earth or Mother Sister Earth. And yeah, so that was a big moment when that happened.
It's his PowerPoint presentation on a building, Pri.
I know. That's an interesting thing too, because what a piece of artistic symbology to have St. Peter's. And they're projecting an image of just trash on top.
Yeah, there's a lot of trash. Trash and, like, melting icebergs. Just, wow.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Mm. It definitely was. And, I mean, this is something that was presented. And that encyclical that he wrote to accompany that is what he gives to all the world leaders. So when Donald Trump gave him that big... Martin Luther King Jr. book that's as big as my chest, inlaid with gold, that document is what he gave Trump in return. And it's like a couple pieces of paper tied together with string. It's, you know, it's fancy paper.
It's very economical.
It's extremely economical and very, it's probably recycled paper that's on its third run or something. But yeah, so... This has kind of been our journey through the film. Is there anything else that you want to say about it or about the audio description?
No, but I definitely had a more in-depth experience than you, as someone described everything to me.
But, you know, it's funny. I watched the movie several times and you still probably got that extra bit of involvement and absorption from it, so. I love that, you know, and I think, you know, regardless of how you may feel about Pope Men or how you feel about Francis, because not everybody's going to be his fan, and I totally get that, you're still going to walk away from that going, that was nice.
Yeah, it was real nice.
And I think that's really important that we started our media commentary with something that was nice, because if we start reviewing The Young Pope, I'm going to get real angry.
Yeah, you hate that show. You're going to make me watch it.
And I'm going to have to watch it again so that I can...
So you remember what happens every episode?
Because right now it's just this giant blur of, oh my god, I hate this so much.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to find the redeeming pieces that I actually would like to talk about. So... There's one scene in particular I know we're going to spend some time talking about. It's the only thing I could think of that I actually liked from the damn thing, so...
All right, well, I guess we'll get there.
Yeah. So, with that, we hope you enjoyed this. If there's anything you wish we talked about more with this, let us know. We can answer any questions that you might have about the film. We can try and help you get access to it, depending on where you are in the world. Because apparently Netflix hates Canada, so...
Well, you can still rent it on Amazon $5.99?
Oh, yeah, okay, so that's good. It's on Amazon. I don't think it's on Hulu or anything yet, but Canada doesn't have that yet, so... If you're in the UK and you're trying to find it, let us know. Let us know if you can find it. We'll post a link for people. So with that, we can say thank you again for supporting us and goodbye.
Bye.